So in China, a year of transition begins. The year of the snake sees China at a moment of supreme power and at the same time experiencing a moment of radical and multi-layered change at many different levels of society all at once. What does this look like? What does it mean for the world? Donald Gross, senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He's author of The China Fallacy, How the U.S. Can Benefit from China's Rise and Avoid Another War. Donald joins us along with Cheryl Wudunn, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of China Wakes, The Struggle for the Soul of a Rising Power. Cheryl and Donald, thanks so much.
Hello.
Thank you, John.
So I'd like to frame this in two ways. First of all, if both of you could describe what is afoot in terms of multi-layered change in China right now, and then give us a sense of the challenge the Chinese leadership has of keeping it in control or, I suppose maybe letting it bloom and blossom without threatening their own control over the society. Cheryl, will you begin?
Well, it is true that the income inequality is one of the biggest challenges. It's been a challenge for many, many years. In China, it's actually more unequal than it is here in the U.S. China has finally surpassed the level of inequality that is here in the U.S. But, you know, they've tried many, many different programs, and even this past week, they issued a new plan to bridge that gap, and it probably is not going to get there.
And Donald, what's your view?
Well, I agree with Cheryl that economic equality and the social implications of that is truly a critical problem that China faces right now. It's exacerbated by the fact that approximately 250 million people from the countryside have moved to the cities, part of the urbanization that we often hear about with China, and they are not eligible for many of the benefits that urban dwellers have under the Chinese household, what's called the Chinese household registration system. That tends to exacerbate the problem. So clearly, for the new leadership coming into China, which will take office in March, addressing the inequality economically, increasing pensions, providing much better health care, giving greater access to education, not only for city dwellers, but for originally city dwellers, but for people from the countryside who have moved to the cities, and for, of course, people in the countryside themselves, that's a truly critical challenge they face. And, you know, as for the second part of your question, it really does go to continuing the legitimacy of the Communist Party and the current leadership in China. They must deal with these problems in an effective way. As Cheryl said, it's quite difficult, and the problems to date of establishing an effective social safety net have not been adequately mitigated or resolved. So it's very much on their agenda as they move forward.
If I can give you an on-the-ground example, for instance, it is very real that, you know, the longer they take to implement anything, the problems in society are really surfacing. So, for instance, in Beijing, when they have a lot of migrant workers come to Beijing to work in the factories, they obviously have to bring their children. But their children cannot go to school because they're not allowed to go to any of the public schools since the families are not registered. So when we were in Beijing in December, we visited a school that was a nonprofit organization set up just to have teachers teach these kids of migrant workers because they had no place to go. And so the kids would live at the school, and the parents, though, don't live there, but they live in places where there wasn't even any heat in the winter. I mean, the conditions that these migrant workers often live in is just deplorable.
And the economy for dealing with migrant workers all over China has produced new opportunities for making money and caused further dislocation, something you've even observed in your old village, Cheryl.
Oh, absolutely. So when we were in Guangdong province, in the village that, one of the villages that my ancestors came from, my grandfather in particular, it was very interesting. I've been visiting that over the years. And when I went back this time, our family had moved out of the village and they had been renting the village to migrant workers from Hunan who weren't yet able to get the factory jobs, but they were renting there so that they could actually till the land because, of course, no one in Guangdong wants to farm. So they want the upper-level factory jobs, and the migrant workers will take the lower-level factory jobs. It's really, you're seeing a ladder developing in China.
Fascinating. Donald Gross, does this mean that there may be new participants in calls for change, new protesters, new groups of people who might be angered at the intransigence and slow-moving pace of change for the Communist Party?
I think so, and I think it's, of course, a worrying factor for the Chinese leadership. Having said that, most of the so-called mass incidents that we've heard about in China, and there were one specific data point that I've heard is in 2010, there were actually approximately 180,000 of those mass incidents in both cities and the countryside. Those were geared preeminently to corporate interests, large infrastructure projects in the villages that increase the environmental degradation that occurred. That's been a major cause of dissatisfaction. From the middle class in China, which has seen its income rise, but is deeply concerned about cronyism, nepotism, and incompetence within the leadership and the party, there's also been rising pressure. But you ask about a different factor, really. What impact will the migration to the cities from the countryside have on the leadership? And I think that's just another very worrying factor for them, on top of environmental degradation that causes discontent, on top of the political activities that also spur discontent within the middle class. There's this additional factor, and as Cheryl points out, there are severe dislocations. The inequality in many respects is getting worse. That's something that the leadership has to address.
Cheryl Wudun, before we go, in this moment when China has become the largest trading partner in the world, surpassing the United States, is the general sense of your visit in December one of discontent, disillusionment, not happiness?
No, not at all. I mean, certainly as people's incomes rise, and it's definitely true that, you know, my villages have benefited. I mean, the people have invested normally. They have benefited enormously. But at the same time, because they see that there is more to get, they also are more dissatisfied because they want to get more.
Worry in the year of the snake. Cheryl Wudun, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of China Wakes, The Struggle for the Soul of a Rising Power, and Daniel Gross, the author of The China Fallacy, How the U.S. Can Benefit from China's Rise and Avoid Another Cold War. Donald and Cheryl, thanks.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.